I guess our production will be simple today. There's no lead-in music or any entertainment that comes in ahead of time. But then again, that's what you deal with probably in budgets. Simple and to the point as best you can do it. Thank you, everyone, today for coming here, both commissioners, press, citizens, whoever else may occupy the room, as well as my finance people, Department of Revenue people, and I'll go through that list in a moment. But I come into today's budget feeling no apprehension. In fact, I had no stress on me at all today. And I'll tell you why, because I'm very happy with it. I know that I can go home and I can look in the mirror and know that we did a darn good job putting it together. And that's why I come in with virtually, I had a lot of people saying to me, are you worried? No, I'm not. Because I'm very happy with what we accomplished. It was a remarkable task because, you know, as a new governor, you come in, you win the election November 3rd, you kind of take office November 4th, and the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like going into the 100-yard dash, and you're going full stride for 50 yards before you realize which way the goal line is. And at that point, you adjust accordingly. But I think we did a remarkable job. I'm very proud of all the people who were involved. Many of them I know more by first name than I do full name, but I do want to go through the list right now. I think these are people that should be recognized, and absolutely should be recognized for the hard work that they did under extreme conditions, because when you come in as a new governor, as a new legislator, you hit the ground and you're faced with the most important task I think that state government has, and that is putting together the biannual budget. And I would like to thank Pam Wheelock, my director of finance. I would like to thank Matt Smith, my Department of Revenue commissioner. I would like to thank Richard Fitzenruder, who I commonly just know as Fitz. I look at his name here and I don't even recognize who he is because he's Fitz to me, who was on loan to us from the University of Minnesota. And these three were very much responsible for the biannual budget you are going to see here today, as well as Department of Revenue people, Tom Stinson, Dick Gabbert, Pat Lean, Gordon Folkman, John Hagen, or Haugen, and the whole tax research staff over there. They did a remarkable job. They pitched in and we got it done in a very short length of time when you look at it, as well as in the Department of Finance. I want to take a moment to recognize Wayne Simino from the departing Governor Carlson staff. Wayne, thank you very much. I enjoy working with Wayne. He thinks he's going to retire, but we may have other plans for him. I told him to keep the fishbowl in the closet because he's my kind of guy. He tells it to you like it is, and he shoots from the hip, as well as his staff, Peggy Ingeson, Charlie, and excuse me if I miss the last names, I know them more as first names. Like I said, Charlie Bylick, Dave Johnson, Jim Showalter, John Heinz, Nancy Rooney, and Stephanie Andrews over in finance. They did a great job. All of the executive budget officers who analyze agency budgets for the governor. Literally dozens of program and fiscal staff in all the state agencies, as well as key advisors like the well-known experts like Dan Salamone and John James, who came on board to do an outstanding job. And these people I want to recognize personally because they certainly, you're only as good as the people around you that participate. Well, let's get down to business. This is the 0001 budget we're going to look at. And we moved forward with a set of basic principles, budget principles and guided decisions. I laid these principles out to my people and they moved forward from there. I want to state unequivocally that we spoke to not one lobbyist. There was no lobbyist input into this budget whatsoever. They didn't help elect me, so what the heck? They don't need any input for me at this point. Some of the principles: be fiscally conservative and prudent. Never forget it's the people's money that we're dealing with. And I think government has a way sometimes of forgetting that factor, that they have an unlimited source of money, and that makes it easy sometimes to forget that. We wanted to do what's necessary in government, not necessarily what's nice to do. We wanted to prevent future costs wherever possible. We didn't want it to spill over on future budgets. We wanted to keep it within this budget. We paid close attention to the future cost of policy and budget decisions, and we insisted that projected budgets are balanced for 4 years, not just two. Four. We're looking ahead. We wanted to set a responsible budget, live within it, and settle up any actual surpluses with taxpayers at the end of the biennium. And that you've heard me talking about many, many times, June 30th, and we want to set it up to where every June 30th, biannually, that's every 2 years, I got to, Peggy tells me to make sure, hold up the two fingers so people realize that's every 2 years, we will settle up with taxpayers. Second, we wanted to do the right things and do them well, which is evaluate programs in tangible ways for real, cost-effective results. We wanted to reform or eliminate programs if they are redundant or aren't producing the desired results. And finally, on any new programs, and I want this to be my personal policy, we include sunset clauses in all new programs so that they can receive proper evaluation. And this doesn't necessarily have to be a negative. When you put a sunset clause on a program, it's to reevaluate that program. And if that program is doing terrific and needs to be funded even more, you can evaluate it at that point and do as such, as well as, you know, on the reverse, if a program is not doing well, we find it's wasting money, we need to eliminate that program. Too many government programs today are implemented and go on forever and ever and ever. Amen. And I don't believe in that at all. I believe that programs, if they're good, will stand on their own 2 feet and stand up to any scrutiny you can put them under, both public, private sector, or what else. Finally, we wanted to provide incentives for desirable behavior. And let me explain what incentives for desirable behavior, where this comes from my world. Let's take the property tax system. I find it just strange that if you're a good citizen and you fix up your property and you make it better, the government penalizes you. You pay more. If you're a bad citizen, you let your property deteriorate, what does the government do? They reward you. You pay less. That, to me, is the wrong mindset to send. And one of the things, and Pam will get into it, that we look at there is, I don't want the use it or lose it mentality, to where within departments they're given a budget. If they don't spend it all, they're in fear of losing that money the next budget around. I want them to be able to save. And if they can save money and know that they got an expenditure in the future, they can have that opportunity to do so then without that use it or lose it mentality. Competition works, and it's good in the government to have the government compete with itself. We want to match responsibility and accountability at all levels, put decisions at the appropriate level, closest to the people, wherever possible. We want to leverage the private and nonprofit support in working with government, because many times the private and nonprofits can do it, frankly, better than we can. And we should be aware of that and allow them to do so and work with them. And I support user fees, where users have a voice in the rates and the program results. Let's go to our next slide, I think. My budget goals were to provide tax relief, let people keep more of their money, plain and simple. Number one, and I think we've accomplished that. We will get into all that tax relief in a moment. I also wanted to ensure the best public education possible. I'm not backing away from public education. I'm attacking it. I'm going after it. And I'm going after it with a challenge to everyone within the educational system, both K through 12 as well as higher education. And the challenge is this. It's very simple to blame me, the governor. It's very simple to blame the school system, the government, the teachers, the superintendents. But all indications are out there, ahead above everything else, is something very, very simple, parental involvement. If parents are involved, the child stands a great chance to succeed. If the parents are not involved, the child stands a great chance not to succeed. And that is my challenge. We've moved forward. The only place you will see an increase in spending is in education. But it's a challenge to the educational system. They had better produce. We better get the results. The challenge is there. They will be backed financially to get those results. Now the ball is in their court with no excuses. I will accept none. I wanted to move forward and invest tobacco lawsuit funds wisely. I do not believe this is a surplus of money, the lawsuit. We were the plaintiffs. We got the results of this settlement, and I think that we as government need to use it in the best possible manner we can. We will go into that later on, but you will find we will never touch the principle. The principle of these one-time payments will always be there, so that, again, going back to a program that maybe isn't working well, there will always be that alternative that you can give the money back down the line if you so choose to. We will be using only profits from the different things that we invest in, and we'll cover that later. But I felt very strongly that we need to invest in health for the future. Yes, we could give it back in a rebate. Everybody would get $150, $160 bucks, and then, you know, where would it be from there? I think we can be wiser and smarter spenders than that, where we can invest in the state of Minnesota as a whole, and we can relieve pressure on some other places that we tax by using this one-time tobacco money. And again, I'll stipulate it'll always be there. The principle will always be there. So we can decide, so decisions can be made 5-10 years down the road at that point in time, whether it's working or not. We seek to continuously reform state government. Naturally, under the time constraints we had, we couldn't do it as well as we wanted to, because you've got to get this budget out. Over the next 2 years, I have a lot more time to dig into the next one. We also wanted to invest and use technology to improve services to the citizens. We felt in certain areas that the state was falling down in their technical end. We want to invest money into that so that we can provide better service to who? Our customers, the people of the state of Minnesota. And we also will make limited investments to improve our communities, which I think in some aspect is also the state's job to do so. If we can go to the next slide. Two-thirds of the available new dollars is being returned to the taxpayers. Both in tax cuts in 00 and 01 and in a 1990 tax rebate. We're making a small investment into the budget reserve, for lack of better terms, to cover our rear ends in case the economy were to take a reverse dive. We need to do that. And then there will be new spending, but I will state this to you, 70% of all new spending is directed towards education. And I will stand firm in saying that that's an investment I think we can all look at with a smile on our face and a laugh in our hearts and say, this is Minnesota's future. And I don't think it's a bad idea to invest in our future, because these are the taxpayers of the future who will come out of those K through 12 and higher education. So upon saying that, 70%. So for all of those that question when Jesse Ventura said, if you're smart enough to get to college, you ought to be smart enough to figure out how. Well, that still holds true. They have to figure out. We're providing it, but they have to figure out how to get it. It'll be out there. We're investing in education very strongly, and I'm very proud of this budget. Like I said, I didn't lose any sleep last night at all over presenting it today, because when you feel good about something, you don't have to. At this point, I'll step aside and turn it over to my Commissioner of Finance, Pam Wheelock. Pam.
There are some of us in the governor's administration that just don't measure up in terms of stature, so Matt and I have opted for the platform. Thank you, Governor, for the introduction. It was a challenge to those of us, Fitz and myself and the finance department staff, to put together a budget that met the governor's expectations. He was clear, he was direct about his priorities, and our job was to translate that into individual budget decisions. We believe that we have done that in the budget that he is proposing to you today. We can go to the next slide. Two-thirds, as he mentioned, is available to the taxpayers in the form of tax relief. That's slightly over $1 billion for a sales tax rebate this year under his recommendations, and $1.372 billion of additional tax cuts in the year 2000 to 2001. He has set aside the one-time tobacco lawsuit settlement dollars for future investments in the health and welfare and self-sufficiency of Minnesotans, and state spending growth is cut by half. The rate of growth is cut by half in the next biennium as compared to the current biennium. 70%, as the governor mentioned, of the new spending is devoted to education, both K-12 and higher education, and all other state spending is below the rate of inflation. With respect to the $1.3 billion in tobacco proceeds from the lawsuit settlement, the governor is recommending that we invest those proceeds, hold the principal, spend only the interest on that principal, and he's directing that expenditure in four different areas. The first area that Michael O'Keefe, formerly of the McKnight Foundation and now the new Commissioner of Human Services, was integrally involved in is the development of a Minnesota Families Foundation. The intent of this foundation is to reduce Minnesotans' reliance on government, and the investment is to be matched dollar for dollar. Those expenditures from interest earnings are to be matched dollar for dollar from non-public sources. This foundation would invest in activities that build assets for Minnesotans to allow them to purchase a first home, to buy a car so they can get to work, to send a child to college, and also to work on the edge in innovative and flexible ways to make sure that state investments in programs like MFIP are successful and Minnesotans can successfully move back into the workforce and become and remain self-sufficient. Other investments recognize the importance of the medical profession in our state, investments for the health and welfare of Minnesotans. Specifically, $350 million is going to be invested in a health professional education and medical research endowment, primarily reflecting the investments at the University of Minnesota in health professional training and medical research. There is another $100 million available for medical education and research costs, otherwise known as MERC. This supplements the money that is provided in the governor's proposed budget in the Department of Health budget and is going to generate roughly $5 million a year for the expenditures in medical education and research. Lastly, and to be funded in the following biennium, the 2002-2003 biennium, is $260 million that will be reserved in the state coffers for investment in public health in our communities, utilizing the public health infrastructure that already exists with our local public health agencies. So that money has been set aside for an investment in Minnesota's future, retaining the principal, allowing future governors, future legislators to review program effectiveness and to evaluate changing priorities. But back to state spending, the state spending that the governor is proposing is on average 2.9% a year, which is significantly below the rate of growth in personal income in Minnesota, and about half the rate of growth in the current biennium as compared to the personal rate of income as well. That spending, as the governor mentioned, is dedicated primarily to education investment. That translates into about a 5.3% annual rate of growth in the K-12 education budget, about 2.5% for our higher education systems, and everywhere else averages 2.3%, below the rate of inflation. The governor emphasized that this budget has to work not only this coming biennium, but the biennium to follow. It needs to be structurally balanced. We need to be responsible in the long term, and we need to make sure that the laws that he has recommended generate sufficient revenue to cover the costs that will be associated with those laws. This is a structurally balanced budget for the coming biennium and the biennium to follow. Because the governor's direction was so strongly focused on taxpayer relief, I'm going to introduce Matt Smith, the Commissioner of Revenue, to talk about the specific elements of the Governor's proposed budget that translate into taxpayer relief in the following biennium. Matt?
Thank you, Pam. I want to briefly summarize the Governor's tax relief proposals. Quickly, as an overview, the sales tax rebate returning more than $1 billion to Minnesota taxpayers in August 1999. Permanent income tax relief totaling $1.6 billion over 4 years. A reduction in the motor vehicle registration tax, saving Minnesota drivers almost $200 million annually. Business tax simplification and one-time changes totaling $260 million, and farm abatement aid to assist hard-pressed farmers this spring with their property tax payments totaling $10 million. All this, of course, comes on the heels of $1 billion in property tax rebates this year and the previous year, completing a balanced picture of tax relief for Minnesota. The Governor talked about settling up every June 30th after the books have closed. The Governor's proposal for a $1.087 billion settle-up sales tax rebate is the first installment in what will become a biennial event for Minnesota. An automatic rebate will be calculated and mailed to 1.65 million Minnesota households based on a proportion of their consumer sales tax paid. The average rebate for each family will be about $775 and $390 for single taxpayers. And as I mentioned, the Governor's budget will establish in permanent law the practice of settling up with the rebate at the close of each two-year budget cycle. The Governor's income tax proposal provides tax relief for every single Minnesotan, and it does this through the combination of three different measures. First, the Governor proposes to eliminate the marriage penalty from Minnesota's income tax rate structure. You know the marriage penalty. It's that unpleasant little surprise that lots of couples encounter when they first start to file jointly and realize the same amount of household income suddenly puts them into a higher tax bracket more quickly. The Governor proposes to end that in Minnesota's tax structure. Secondly, the Governor proposes to reduce the tax rate on the first tier of Minnesota taxable income from the current 6% down to 5.8% in tax year 1999 and then to 5.75%. So more that income is taxed at a lower rate. Thirdly, the Governor expands the upper limit of the first income tax bracket so that Minnesotans can earn more money and still be taxed in the lowest rates. The net result of these three measures is shown on the next slide. Minnesotans can earn more and pay less. The combination of rate reductions and bracket expansion means more income is taxed at lower rates. And this shows an example for a married couple filing a joint return. Currently, they can earn up to $25,000 and then are kicked into the 8% bracket, and above $100,000 taxable, they're kicked into the 8.5% bracket. Under the Governor's plan, they can be in the 5.75% bracket once fully implemented at up to $41,000 of income, and they can get up to $113,000 of income before they're kicked into the 8.5% bracket. The overall income tax reduction is about 6%. But for taxpayers who are particularly adversely affected now by the marriage penalty, reductions will be in the neighborhood of 12%. The Governor's plan also cuts the motor vehicle registration tax. The Governor has said a number of times, I think you've probably heard it too, you know, the road doesn't really know or care what the value of the car is driving on it. Doesn't wear out any faster, whether it's an expensive car or not. Under the Governor's proposal, no one will pay more than $75 to renew their tabs after December 31st, 1999. So under this proposal, no car owner will pay any more than they do under current law, that about 45% of the vehicles on the road will pay lower tax than presently. This will save Minnesota drivers about a little less than $200 million a year, and we will make a fixed annual transfer from the general fund to offset lost highway fund revenues. Governor's bill will also provide for business tax relief and simplification. First, the governor proposes repeal of the June accelerated sales and excise tax payments. These are holdovers from the early 1980s financial problems of the state, when the state essentially forced retailers who collect tax on behalf of the state to pay early because the state needed the money more than they did. The governor proposes to end this shift and go back to a normal schedule of payment. Secondly, the governor proposes elimination of the refund process requirement for capital equipment that's now exempt from tax under current law. Businesses have to first pay the tax, then come back and apply to the state later on to have that tax refunded to them. The governor proposes moving to an upfront exemption. And then thirdly, the governor provides for a sales and use tax exemption for production inputs used in the preparation of filmmaking, TV commercials, other films, to make Minnesota's film industry and remain competitive with California. Finally, the governor proposes $10 million in targeted property tax relief for farmers this spring. $10 million in abatement aid would be provided to counties to allow county boards to use tax abatement authority to defray or abate property taxes for farmers in financial hardship. This allows tax relief for farmers to be targeted to the farmers who are most in need and provides appropriately for those decisions about relief to be made at the county seat level rather than in St. Paul. We might add also that farmers that had a bad year during 1997 and didn't earn any money and had no taxable income would, of course, still be eligible for a sales tax rebate under the governor's budget proposal. The next slide illustrates what the total impact of the governor's plan will be on three families. Every Minnesota family is different, of course, but for families of various household levels with some typical valued cars, a $35,000 household might see $680 in total savings. A family earning $75,000 might see $1,580 or so savings, and a family with an income of $150,000 may see as much as $2,400 in savings. There's tax benefits, tax relief for virtually every Minnesotan in this proposal. Finally, as the governor mentioned, he didn't have time to take on everything in this budget. We recognize that there are a lot of issues in the tax system. The governor mentioned some already today. So this plan sets the stage for longer-term reform. The governor proposes establishment of a tax study commission to develop plans to make the tax system more simple and more understandable, more equitable, more accountable, more reliable and predictable, and more efficient. And the recommendations of this tax study commission will set the stage in conjunction with some other budget issues being analyzed for recommendations in the next budget, the 2002-2003 budget. I think with that, I'm going to turn it back to Pam Wheelock.
Now back to the specifics in spending for the remainder of the governor's proposed budget. As we emphasized, the governor focused what spending initiatives he was prepared to advance on the education area. He believes that if we're clear about what job we want the K-12 system to do and if we provide them adequate resources, then we should be able to expect results. The emphasis on accountability holds true not only in the K-12 area but other areas of his proposed budget. And in the K-12 area, he is emphasizing that by asking for the creation of a K-12 financing commission, which will be done in conjunction, obviously, with the Tax Reform Commission, given the relationship between the two. Specifically, the $7.735 billion in state spending that the governor has recommended brings the state's share of K-12 spending to almost 70% in the year 2001. $560 million of that spending is an increase above the base and accounts for half of the new general fund spending in the budget. That's an annual increase of 5.3% per year, and included in that is a per pupil formula increase of 2.5% each year at a total cost for the biennium of $258 million. Other initiatives in the K-12 budget, an additional $150 million for K-3 class size reduction, and the goal is to bring class sizes to a 17-to-1 student-teacher ratio. There's additional funding provided for a sliding fee breakfast program so that kids get proper nutrition before they head into the classroom, and to incentives to experiment with longer days, longer school days, school weeks, school years, for education purposes, that's classroom purposes. The governor is also recommending an increase of $97 million for special education funding. That's not an increase in the size of the program, the eligibility, the benefits provided, but rather it's an increase in the portion of costs that state pays. So that $97 million will be provided to the school districts, freeing up funds at the local level for them to reinvest in other parts of the K-12 budget. In part, that increase in overall funding in the general ed formula is being provided by eliminating funding for small, specific, specialized, categorical grant and aid programs. So $24 million is being redirected into that general education formula, which the governor believes is fair and more representative of the needs in the system. Higher education is also going to receive a significant increase. $248 million is going to be provided over the base, and the focus is to make sure that we adequately compensate not only employees, but provide also a significant increase for faculty salaries so that our systems, which are a great asset for our state, can remain competitive across the country. It focuses on improving undergraduate education at the University of Minnesota. There's also a significant investment in the MNSCU system, our state college and university system, for workforce development and job training programs. There is an increase in the student aid, recognizing the tuition increase, and we're able to do that in part because of the increase in federal funding at the federal level. And there is an investment in statewide electronic library information systems to better access information across the state. In other areas of the budget, the governor had indicated his interest in aggressively seeking opportunities to reform government through restructuring and reform, program evaluation, and budget reductions, reprioritizing the state spending. Restructuring and reform, we are initially focusing on the Department of Children's, Family, and Learning, which the governor has renamed with the support of the Lieutenant Governor, the Department of Education, Children, and Families. And we're beginning that process by moving the Office of Drug Policy out of that department and back into the Department of Public Safety. During the next year or two, the additional programs in that department will be evaluated to determine whether they're consistent with the mission of that department. We're looking at other opportunities, for example, with the Minnesota Zoo, to turn that into a nonprofit organization, to allow them to really go out and maximize their fundraising potential, and to free them from the burdens that that may create in terms of being associated as a state agency. Program evaluation, the governor has directed Minnesota Planning, Department of Finance, and agency staff to be prepared to work over the next 2 years to really evaluate the success and effectiveness of the programs that we are funding. This will be a major initiative, and the governor is looking to agency heads for accountability for the funds that he is placing in their budget to ensure that it meets the program needs that it was designed for. There are budget reductions in various areas, either because it is not clear that that is an essential function of the state, or in order to better fund those programs and services that are clearly an essential function of the state. So there are reprioritizations of funding in the program areas. The Department of Trade and Economic Development is an example. Certain small grant and aid programs are being eliminated to help the state better fund those areas that are priority functions. To assist agencies in really meeting the governor's expectations for program results, the governor recognized that the state is not keeping up with investments in technology. We're falling behind. Systems are not functional. They are inefficient. Citizens do not have good access to state programs, and to begin to address that situation, the governor in his budget is recommending $85 million in funding for state agencies and an additional $10 million for the U of M and MinSCU systems. Beyond that, the governor recognizes that there are many programs that the state is involved in that really do improve the lives of our citizens and the welfare and well-being of our communities, and he is recommending funding in various areas to address that. Recognizing the increasing caseloads in our criminal justice system, he is recommending increases for the court system and for the correction system to address that caseload growth. He's recommending additional funding to preserve and create affordable housing. $16 million will be invested throughout the next biennium to preserve that housing. Making selected investments in environment and natural resources to clean our lakes and rivers, to provide recreational opportunities at our state parks, and has also provided $60 million for light rail transit. That $60 million is being provided in the budget, and during the course of the following weeks, the governor, in consultation with staff, will make a decision about whether to recommend that that actually be used for the development of a light rail transit system. We're improving service at driver's testing sites. The three-month delay should be eliminated with the additional funding that's being provided. And the governor is also recommending that we increase our attention to protecting the investment that we have already made in our state facilities and buildings. He's recommending a $36 million investment to adequately repair and improve our state facilities. Worker training is a high priority in a period of high employment. Maintaining economic growth in the state makes it imperative for us to ensure that Minnesota residents are in the workforce with the best skills that they are able to achieve, and so we are investing in job skills partnership funds and MinSCU job training programs to enable that investment in our workforce. The senior drug program, which was begun this year, will be fully funded by the year 2001 at a cost of about $16.5 million a year. This is a program that enables senior citizens at 120% of the federal poverty level or below to qualify for assistance so that they can adequately purchase the drugs that they need to stay healthy. And the governor is recommending about $80 million so that our healthcare system can be maintained at the levels that it is now at, that we will not experience providers dropping out of our system. So $80 million will be invested in cost of living adjustments for nursing homes, for dentists, and for other health care providers. The cumulative impact of this budget, we believe, represents the governor's direction to us to provide tax relief, let people keep more of their money, invest in the best public education possible, use the tobacco proceeds wisely, continuously reform state government, use technology to improve services to citizens, and make limited investments representing the state's role to continuously improve our communities. For the next 2 years, these efforts will not stop with the submission of this budget today, but for the next 2 years, state agency staff will be expected at the governor's direction to continue to find opportunities to ensure accountability for results, appropriately limit the role of government, develop a long-term strategy to promote self-sufficiency for Minnesotans, expand flexibility for local solutions where the problem identification and problem solving are best put, where people know most about the issue, and to involve citizens, businesses, and communities in state decision making. We believe this budget represents those goals, and we continue to move forward during the next biennium to achieve additional results. With that, I'll introduce the governor, Matt, again, and I think we have a few minutes to consider questions. Let me get the platform. Okay.
Well, certainly this is my budget, and it now goes to the legislature, doesn't it? And if they so choose to be more generous, that they certainly have the opportunity to do so. I think the uniqueness about this budget and the money we allocated, first of all, is that it'll go to the local level, so that you'll have to come in and prove your need at the county level, to where it's not just a carte blanche across the table blanket coverage of farmers who don't need it. Under the some of the proposals right now, I would benefit on my farm, and I can tell you honestly that I don't fully need it. It could go to other people. Well, don't laugh. I mean, it's my wife's business, and she's barely breaking even on it, rest assured, but we don't need the help. And so, therefore, I think that's the, you know, the indication is we're targeting very closely on it, and we're leaving it up to the local, the locals to make that determination. And they also will benefit from the sales tax rebate, where if it's strictly an income tax rebate, the farmer will get zero. Under my sales tax, the farmer can, if they have no income, will still get a few hundred dollars of rebate from the sales tax.
Governor Ventura, is there more new spending in here that candidate Ventura would have anticipated?
I can't answer that. I'm sorry. The question was, is there more spending in here that than what candidate Ventura would have anticipated? And that's a hypothetical that I can't answer, because as a candidate, you're not fully in touch with the budget process, and you're not fully sitting down with budget experts and who look at the situation and what you can perform and what you can do in the limited amount of time that you have to do it. I would say in the next budget, I will be able to focus even more so, because I have a two-year period in which to do so, rather than that, rather than a 6 to 8 week period that you get here.
Your budget depends here in part, if I'm not mistaken, on the money from the bonding bill, the $400 million cash for bonding. The House just defeated the attempt to take that money back for spending purposes now. How are you going to make up that money?
The House didn't defeat it. Better do your homework. Well, there's another bill keeping it all together as one unit that is still over there, and I'm very much feel very good about that. The entire budget proposal passing in a one vote covering. This was an attempt to separate it. There's another bill that keeps it all together that hasn't been voted on yet.
Let me follow up then. If you fail to get the money from the bonding, however, do you need to rejigger things a lot, or can you get the money somewhere else?
No.
Governor, you're giving K through 12 education a big bump. Other governors have done that, and other governors have said they want accountability in terms of results. Can you be specific, please, to Minnesota taxpayers if after a certain amount of time test scores don't go up, you're going to do this or whatever? What accountability measures are you going to actually hold up against the school district?
Well, certainly test scores will be one indication of it. And also, much of our budget is based upon incentives that they have to provide to get the money. It's not just being handed over. They have to, at the local level, provide that 17-to-1 ratio in which to qualify. It has to clear through our, you know, department whether they then qualify to get the money to come forward and get it. It's not just being handed over. We have a good check and balance system in there, because there has been class reduction money allocated for a few years now that is not being used for that purpose. In our situation, it will be used for that purpose.
You talked about parental involvement, and your predecessor actually went so far as to ask Minnesota parents to sign a pledge saying that they'd be responsible for their kids' education and have them ready when they come to school. What do you think about that? Is that a good idea?
I don't require a pledge. I don't require signature. When you look Jesse Ventura in the eye and tell him something, he'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I operate under a simple premise: fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And my point is, this isn't just dealing with getting kids ready to go to school. When I talked about earlier about parental involvement doesn't end at age 5. Parental involvement doesn't come to an end when you turn the kids over to the school system, by no stretch of the imagination. The study that I watched and looked at studied 100 different schools throughout the United States of America, both urban, suburban, rural, rich schools, poor schools, all of them, and it showed very clearly that parental involvement in the education K through 12 is needed. And I'm going to challenge the parents of Minnesota to quit blaming the system and to look into the mirror. Because why should a kid care about his education if mom and dad don't? We've all been there. We know what it's like. Think back when you were that age. If your mother and father didn't take interest in what you were doing, why should you? And that's what I'm going to challenge them on, is parents becoming involved, getting back to local schools, local PTAs, and getting back to parents actively involved in the public school system.
What is your response to House Republicans who say that the income tax should be twice as large overall and that they should be spread over all the income brackets?
Ours is spread over all the income tax brackets. If you need a lesson in taxation, you all pay. And the first so much you make is covered across the board. This income tax rebate covers every Minnesotan because it's up to a certain point of income before you graduate up higher. So whether you make $1 million a year, you will get relief. Not that I don't think you need it at $1 million. Pay me $1 million and I won't need it. Yes.
How do you plan on it passing if that portion of it could not pass today?
Well, you better talk to the legislature. How I plan on watching it pass was I met with the legislative bodies, and I seemed to get some solid support from it. And it requires 81 votes, and I think it's strong enough as a whole, the entire bill, to get 81 votes and pass. They just disagreed. You probably had politics going on in there. And my point being is, just because they disagreed today doesn't mean they'll disagree tomorrow on a different bill that's the whole package. If the same people that voted for it today vote for it again, and if, 13 people come over from the other side and vote for the whole package, it passes, doesn't it?
With Sad Buster Kenny J tax cuts?
Nothing.
Governor, on the additional money that you've put...
I guess I'd say I didn't realize that Republicans spent so much time watching wrestling. Maybe they ought to spend more time at something else.
Governor, on the additional money that you wanted to put into the budget reserve, I believe it's $45 million, what made you decide to do that? The previous administration said that they had pretty much fully stocked all of the budget reserves. There was no need for any additional reserve.
I'd like to answer this. In the November forecast, as many of you know who follow capital budgeting and report on it, DRI had a gloomy outlook for Minnesota in the next couple of years, and we actually had been thinking of a more sizable increase in the budget reserve to recognize that the economy that we've known over the last few years may well not be the economy that we know over the next few years. Because DRI slightly improved that outlook in January, we actually reduced the amount that we were going to add to the reserve, but we still thought it was prudent to have a slight increase.
Wait, if I could back up, I had a chance to think for a moment on your question, Pat. As I recollect, one time Kenny J did pin the Crusher.
Governor, your motor vehicle excise tax proposal essentially takes from the Highway Trust Fund the future growth that it would otherwise realize from the motor vehicle excise tax and in essence, deny that money for roads and bridges. Do you think that highways are overfunded and they don't need that future growth, or
no,
do you envision some other source of funding to fill that gap?
It said it would be taken from the general fund. by what I saw up there.
The future growth will not. That's going to be frozen.
My view is this. We'll deal with it when we get to it. I mean, I look at the entire licensing fees of cars in this state. Cars are the only thing that's based on the value. I mean, everything, if you buy a motorcycle, it's a flat rate, isn't it? Whether you buy a Harley-Davidson worth $10,000, $12,000, or whether you buy a Honda 150 that's worth not nearly that amount, it's still a flat rate for a motorcycle. If you look at boats, it's a flat rate for boats. It's a flat rate for trailers. It's a flat rate for everything you drive out on the highway. And you've already paid, when you purchased that car, you paid a sales tax, which covered the expense of that car. You're now paying for the right to use that car out on the highways. And I just find that grossly unfair that one car pays more than another car when they all drive the same. You know, they're all buying the okay, let me put it to you this way. When you go in for your driver's license, do you have to bring in your W-2? No, you pay a flat rate to purchase a driver's license to drive, which gives you the ability and the privilege to drive on our highways. Nothing is based upon your income. Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to add something to that. I think that anyone that's listened to this governor, either in the last few months or before he became governor, has heard him talk about the registration tax. It's no surprise to anyone in the room that he has a proposal to reduce the registration tax, but perhaps, you know, where you sit is where you stand. What he is recommending is not just reducing that registration tax, but holding the highway user fund harmless by adding that general fund transfer. So is there some ongoing discussion about transportation needs? Certainly, and the legislature and the governor have the discretion to address that every single year.
But doesn't dealing with it when you get to it go against your plan for going 4 years out on this?
What we're assuming, let's make sure we're clear about this. The governor is recommending a transfer of $191 million a year. And those needs, quite frankly, that system is generating more in revenues than anyone ever anticipated. So there is more spending that's available just because it is bringing in more than was anticipated. So if that is inadequate, we certainly can address that in the future, but there is ongoing transfer of funds every single year.
And on that note, we will end because I have a great amount of TV programs that I'm scheduled to go from one to the next to the next to the next, and it's live at 6, not quite live at 5.
So,
but we will be out in the reception room for more questions if people want to approach out there. Thank you very, very much.